engage in some exercise doing. So the last thing I did was to illustrate how the fundamental algorithm in Benzim is, using a very, very simple example where we have only one level and one flow. And then I show how this goes on by an algorithm where calculations are done, time step is increased, is added to the time until we come to the final time. In this case, the time step is 1. Now, the time step is the interval between the calculations, and the smaller the interval is, the more calculations that is done. So, if we now took this model, and instead of computing with a time step of 1, which in reality a bank will do, we do computations with shorter time steps. So, here you see actually comparison between 5 curves. I go and say, what would happen if the bank only computed the interest at the end of 20 years? Time step 20, curve 1 in red color. Well, then you get a straight line. You have this value here, originally 100. And then after 10 years, you get the added interest. What happens if the time step is 10 years? Well, you have an intermediate calculation here, and the next one here, and you see already by having a shorter time step, you get a completely different result between curve 1 and 2. Now, if you make the time step shorter, third option, every 5 years, then you get this curve, which again is a significant different curve from the one from the previous time step. If you now do it every year, which is the way the bank does it, you get a curve number 4. If you did it every 6 months, which no bank does or very rarely do, then you still get a different result. And you are seeing as you are using smaller and smaller time steps, you are converging more and more to some value. In the end, making the time step smaller doesn't make significant differences. And as I said, the time step that you must choose in your simulations must be one where in the end you don't see visually change in the curves. So now the Euler's method for a situation that has several levels and several flows. So the algorithm is start with the initial value of time. Set your simulation time equal to the start time. Calculate the initial values of the levels. Calculate all the other equations in the order of dependency. So before you can compute something, you must have computed the input. And then calculate the net flow of all levels. The net flow is the sum of the inflows minus the sum of the outflows. Then you increment the time. And for each level, add the net flow. Isn't it working? Strange. Is it working now? Strange. Well, thank you for saying. The time is incremented and all the levels are computed, the new values as the old values plus the net flows. Then go to step 3, that means calculate all the auxiliaries, calculate the net flows, increment the time, calculate the new levels and so on, until the time has reached the final time and then the computation is stopped. So how do you find a good time step? You can see here what the Euler method is with a short time step and with a smaller time step. The errors come because you are approximating the curve by these columns. So the difference between the height of the column and the real curve is the error. So you can see why making smaller time step makes these columns fitting better and better to the curve. So how do you do? First of all, you should start with a time step that is less than half of the smallest time constant in the model. So if there are some delays, time delays or adjustment times, find which is the smallest one and make sure that your time step is at least half of that. Then, if you see that your model has sharp yak oscillations, you may have a balancing loop that is simulating incorrectly because it has a big time step. Then you have the half-again rule. The half-again rule is based upon visual checking of the graph behavior, run the model, drop the time step by half and run again, look for the pattern of behavior if it's the same as before. If it is so, you stop. If not, you do again half of the time step until you get a satisfactory result visually. If you are looking for a numerical accuracy, then you will have to check the numbers and to make sure that the differences between the previous simulation and the new simulation with a smaller time step fits with the required numerical accuracy. Okay, then the other things I think I can skip in the previous slide. In this slide, I show you, for instance, a model where the time step is wrong. You have a model, very simple, with staff being hired according to some typical time, and you are comparing your staff with the desired staff. If your time step is small, and you have a test function where you want to increase the staff from 5 to 10, this is the recruiting curve. It is jagged, and this cannot be correct. If you reduce the time step from originally 0.4 to time step 0.1, and here you have an indication. The constant time to adjust was 0.25. Your time step is not half of that, but it's actually bigger. That's why you get inaccuracy. If you now make the time step 0.1, which is less than half the time to adjust, then you see how the simulation becomes smoother. But still, you will have to check if this red curve will become changed significantly when you make half of the time step, that is 0.05. If that is the case, then you stop. If not, you continue. Now, there are situations where the Euler method doesn't work. The Euler method is a little bit too simple to deal with nonlinear, extremely nonlinear situations. So there is an example, which I don't remember if I have it in front of, but I can put it, which is an ecological model, which actually simulates quite well a situation where you have one predator and one prey in isolation, for instance, in an island. In this case, you have wolves, they prey on rabbits, and this model is actually a Lotke-Volterra equation, which is a famous mathematical model that was developed by two mathematicians independently, Lotke and Volterra. Now, if you take this model and use the Euler method, no matter how small you make the time step, because of the strong nonlinearities, you get a curve that simply oscillates with higher and higher amplitudes. The correct behavior should be as right, in the right, and this you can remedy by using an advanced method, which is called Runge-Kutta, again, a name that is due to two different mathematicians who developed that. Well, actually, Kutta was an Indian mathematician, whereas Runge was a German astronomer, but he was very good in mathematics. So they proposed a different method for integrating differential equations that avoids the problem of the very simple Euler method. And the Runge-Kutta method is actually a series of methods that you have intermediate calculations of different orders. The simplest one is a Runge-Kutta of second order, typically abbreviated as RK2. You can have third order, fourth order, and so on. They become more and more advanced, but in most cases, the second order is good enough. In Vensim, you choose the algorithm like this. Model, settings, And then integration type, you see Euler there. And this is the default method. If you want Runge-Kutta in the version of Benzim that you have, the one that is free for academic use, they only have a fourth order Runge-Kutta method with automatic adjustment of the time step. What does it mean? It means that it actually adjusts the length of the time step automatically. So if there is some area where the equations are extremely nonlinear, there it makes the time step small. In some others where it varies little, it makes a larger time step, so as to optimize the number of calculations. So for most of the models that you are using, Euler is enough. But if you ever see a situation where it is not simulating correctly, then you choose the Runge-Kutta, and even with a big time step, you will very quickly see that it simulates very well. I can anticipate now that in this class you will never need the Runge-Kutta method for accuracy, because the models that you get from me, even if they have non-linearities, you don't have strong non-linearities as you would have with singularities or so. So the Euler method will be enough. But in professional use, you may be in need of using the Runge-Kutta method. Now, if you want to relate Benzin to calculus, so here is how that relates. The levels is the state variables, the integrals of the system, whereas the flows is the derivative of the level. So differentiation would be computing the flows from the stocks or from the levels. You would calculate the cost from the effects, where integration, which is what we do here, is the process by which the stocks are calculated from the flows, calculating the effects from the cost. So you can say that when you are simulating, you are doing the way the world operates, by integration. Forrester, Jay Forrester, the founder of system dynamics, he said, nowhere does the world differentiate. It only integrates. That was his favorite saying. Probably it still is. As I said, he's close to being 100 years old. Okay, then I will stop with this, with a lecture for today. I want to engage you in some exercise. Are there any particular questions related to things that we have been doing? No questions, okay. If you are curious about Jay Forrester, you could take, for instance, Wikipedia, assuming this comes here. I take the English version of Wikipedia and choose here Jay Forrester. There he is. That is Jay Forrester. As I said, nearly 100 years old. He is now 96 years old. I know him personally. He was professor at MIT, and he used to be present in all the conferences where I visited, which I visited, in system dynamics. And he was still active even last time I met him. And probably he's still active. And also, 22 years ago, he allowed two companies that were in a dispute to meet in his office and resolve the dispute. He wasn't there, but we were able to use his office at MIT. I was there because the company PowerSim that I co-founded was threatened by an American competitor because they claimed that our tool, PowerSim, was very similar to, I think, which they had developed. In the end, it turned out to be nonsense, but we had to pay attorneys a very highly priced to help us defend the case. Instead of being a question that we decided in court, Forrester said, why don't you meet in our office, and then if you cannot agree, then we can appoint some experts And if you accept the experts, what they say that is correct, then the issue should be resolved. And we agreed to do that. So, as I said, I founded PowerSIM together with two colleagues. And if you are curious, then that's the company that I co-founded, PowerSIM Software. And the tool they use that we call PowerSIM Studio, it still exists, but now very advanced and so on. Probably you can even download a free version here and download if you want to inspect it. Many things are similar to VenSIM, but as I said, it's much more detailed tool. The learning curve is slower, so that's why I do not recommend PowerSIM. And just to make it clear again, in addition, I have no longer interest in PowerSIM. I stepped out in the company in 2002. We committed a mistake to getting investors, and they paid for the shares in the company, and then they decided what to do, and they were unfortunately not so good in the decisions. So we had a period of growth where we have offices in many countries in the world. We had offices in Norway, in Sweden, in Germany, in the United Kingdom, in London, and then we had in the United States and in Canada, I believe. But then it happened with many companies do when they grow too quickly, they run out of resources before they are actually operative. So the investors step out and the company went bankrupt. And then the former employees in Norway decided to buy the technology for, I think they paid 1 or 2 million crowns, and they run the company. Whereas the founders, we were no longer interested in that, in the company. So we step out. You can see, if you are interested, you can see here as to PowerSIM lives from developing the software, but also as a consultant company. So if you are interested, you can have a look at this. The other link that you might be interested in looking is Dynaplan. This is also a Norwegian company, and it was my former associate at PowerSIM, Magne Myrtveit, who has developed a new simulation tool. It is a very good simulation tool, but even more complicated to use than PowerSIM. Yes? Okay. Maybe. Is, do you hear me? Okay. So the other product you might be interested in looking at is Dynaplan, and just in case you are interested in seeing both the tool and what it can be done with the tool. It is even more complicated in use than PowerSIM, but it has quite a success with some number of customers, and so on. And as I said here, the person who developed this, he did that in a PhD project that I got financed by an international company. And he was actually a younger associate of myself in PowerSIM, who now founded this company and it's running. And in this company, some of my former students are working, as they are also in PowerSIM. In PowerSIM, three of my former students are employed. In Dynaplan, I think one of my former students is employed. Okay, now what I would suggest that you do as an exercise is the there are two exercises that I would recommend you doing. We can take both now. So I will open the file. Exercises about reference behavior. So what is this? In this you can download from Fronta. Going back to how you would model some problem for some client, what you need to do is to collect data so that you can compare your model with some time series. And that's what we mean by reference behavior. Reference behavior, they are time series of some variables of your model, and you will have to compare what your model is doing with the data about the actual behavior in reality. Now, and this will surprise some of you, sometimes you don't have this numerical data. So what do you do? Well, you ask the people who know about the problem about how they would graph the data, the behavior. So if you don't have real measurements, they tend to have an idea as to what has happened. So use even the inaccurate soft data that they would provide by hand drawings. Again, it's better to be approximately correct than exactly wrong. If you neglect that data because you don't have exact measurements, you are making the data taking out of the model, meaning it has value zero. It is much better to have inaccurate data for the time being. You should try to get the best data that you have, but use whatever data you have. So if you cannot use exact measurements, use approximate ideas and so on. And these exercises have to do with that. I would like you to work a little bit with these two issues, or at least one of them, privacy, security, and customer satisfaction. So the exercise one gives you a story. It says we are getting more and more data in the cloud or so. So much of our personal information is stored on computers and networks. Now, very often the knowledge about privacy is too low, and that leads to security incidents. People are not aware of that, and you can have identity theft, or your credit card numbers are stolen, your passwords, and so on. So, and that's because people are ignorant as to how to prevent or even to detect that this has happened or how they respond. There was recently an article in the newspaper where a person said, "I have no idea what I did wrong so that somebody stole my identity." Stolen the identity means somebody is impersonating you and using that information to take a loan in the bank that is then paid to his or her bank account, or perhaps even to create a false passport in your name but with their picture so that they can immigrate to the United States and get a job there or whatever. So this person say, "I don't know what I did wrong, but suddenly it was discovered that somebody was impersonating me." That has typically to do with not knowing enough. So what I would like you to do is you should sketch some reference mode that will depict undesired behavior of the following quantities. Undesired means that's the problem, that is happening. So kind of sketch the privacy awareness, the awareness that people have about issues of privacy, the rate they will be storing personal information on the cloud, and sketch the security incidents related to that. So what I am asking you to do is just to get it started is let's start with something simple. You take some time scale. You decide which time scale it is, say from the year 2000 to year 2015. So and the y-axis, you choose one of these variables. Just for an example, let's put the rate of storing personal information of net. Then I would like you to, based on your impression, don't matter if your impression is correct or not, but simply use your intuition and think about some numbers, some country which you know well, Ukraine, Norway, whatever, and rate of storing personal information, how would you measure that? First you have to decide what kind of units you are going to use. Are you speaking of the average person? Or are you speaking about the total population and so on? You make some decision about that and then sketch some curve as you assume that it would be. The purpose of this exercise is simply to get you thinking. I am not asking you, I am not assuming that you will be able to put something that is accurate enough in terms of representing reality. There will be inaccuracies anyhow because we are putting that from memory or so. Maybe the curve you draw in the end would be different from one that experts will compute from available data. But I want you simply to exercise this. So what you have to think about is what are actually you measuring when you put the personal info on net, information on net. How do you measure that? So come up with some idea or some suggestions and then make some sketch. So that will be the one. The other one for the same axis. Would be somewhere about the awareness, privacy awareness. How aware are people that the data, which should be private, is can be compromised by storing in the net? So again, think of some way of measuring that and create such a diagram. And then finally, consider on the same scale the security incidents related to privacy violations, let's call. Through security incidents. So I want you all to spend a few minutes sketching this. Again, it's important that you identify some reasonable unit for measuring that and you are precise as to what, as precise as necessary, as to how you define that. Then you sketch some curve and argue for that. Provide some arguments. And that's typically the kind of exercise that I would conduct if I was creating a model for some customer. And I see we have identified some variables in the model and these variables are needed for my model. Then I would ask that. And if they are well prepared, then we'll say, oh, we have done that before. Here is a statistics. If they are less well, then they will have to say, okay, according to my intuition and what I know, it will be like this. Sometimes it turns out that different people come up with different suggestions And then that's interesting. If two key people in a company are given different answers, then that means they have an unresolved issue. Who is right? And what do we need to do in order to find out who is right? Maybe both are wrong and so on. But this is the kind of processes that within this group model building. Okay, so please spend some minutes and come up with some suggestions. And by the way, you don't need to think numbers here. For the time being, let's do it qualitatively. So we are interested in low, high, medium values and so on. Because if we start thinking about numbers, then it's much more challenging. And I wouldn't assume that you have numbers about that. Yes? In this case, it's being aware that there is an issue about privacy. So people who are not aware at all, they simply haven't realized that by storing personal information on the cloud, say, that they may expose things that are sensitive to others. They have no awareness at all. Whereas those who would be completely aware, they will have full knowledge of all the privacy issues that may be there. So you could consider a scale, say, between 0 and 1, 0, no awareness, total about privacy issues, one being perfectly informed. No, that's a different parameter. It is first, this is first just about their awareness and so. And you have to decide also, what are you referring to? So my suggestion would be, consider the average citizen and say where it is, because it's going to be different in, say, Germany than in Rwanda. It's going to be different. There's better information, more experience, more awareness, arguably, in Germany than in Rwanda. So you need to fix up different parameters. So which country are you thinking of? What kind of average you will be considering, because you are not putting every person there. And also in averages, are you going to consider the whole population? No, because then you will have also the babies and so on. So something like the average student or something like this. You have to make some decision, and all these decisions is the kind of things that we need to do when we are working with clients. The first thing is being exact as to what we want to do, and then creating the curves. So let's say you work now for 5 minutes, and then I spend the last 5 minutes in discussing the solutions. Or the other thing, let me see if I can pronounce your name correctly. Konstantin, is that reasonably correct? If you like, you could come here and sketch. Would you like to do that? Then why don't you come in here and then we put a bit more light so that it is easier to see. And you can't start anywhere. And just speak while you are doing it. I can give you the microphone so that you can be heard.
quite unusual.
You can take the red cross. Mm-hmm.
No, I will start with personal info, and my idea is the following. I would make my own measurement here, and it would be number of people whom are we considering, for example, current population. We will mark that as n. Multiplied by some coefficient. Let's take it, for example, from 1 to 4. And this coefficient means how much personal information one particular person publishes. For example, 1 as the lowest, we can say that he publishes just some photos, and 4 is that he publishes all his bank account data, passport data, and all that. I in my sketch I called it depth. I don't know, is it okay? Depth. Okay. So in all these pictures, I will take in account Ukraine. I don't know, is it similar to Norway? So let's start from here. I will make grades here, like this, low, medium, high, and extremely high. So, I would say that in year 2000 it was low, because no cloud services, no social networks. I think that time people were mostly spreading information just through email. And then year 2010, I would consider it was high, and I would paint the curve like this, because somewhere in this moment there was a huge increase in number of people who started to using social network, and in year 2010 I believe there was increase in people who started to use cloud services. Firstly, I think it started with business sector, and then it came to personal life. And from here I would say that the growth was steadily like this, so no curve.
Okay, yes, I like this idea. I think I would have done it similarly for as you did. So a slow increase to begin with, then more and more people use it, more and more possibilities are viable. Perhaps here I would start assuming not necessarily that it goes straight, perhaps a bit leveling off. But this is a defensible argument, and let's say that's something that we modelers have concluded. Yes, we take this. Then we could go over to some of the other diagrams. Have you thought some other one?
Yeah, I was thinking about privacy awareness, and here I would use also similar approach. So I would put here a measurement that's number of people, for example a population, multiplied by also some grade, how aware are they. For example, one means that they are totally unaware. They think that all the information they put on the internet, they consider it to be safe and protected. And four is that they are aware of all the of all the possible vulnerabilities that we can have on the internet and on all the dangerous consequences that they can get. So I call it awareness coefficient. In my mind, it I will also make this gradient scale here. In my mind, up to the year 2005, it was nearly a horizontal line, because there were no there were no huge discussions in the society concerning that, and no one was even perhaps thinking about these issues as privacy awareness. So mainly, it was considered just in some corporate or business structure, not connected to the personal life. Then, when we take 2010, I think there was a rise in different bank fraud, and online banking was also introduced in many banks in Ukraine. So I would say that people started to be aware more. And I think that this process continues up to the year 2015. So I would put it. I mean, I believe that now it is high. I hope that.
Okay. Yes. So we take this as its face value and see. Okay, that's an expert from Ukraine who was telling us what happens in the country, and then. This is a little bit of a challenge. We have only 2 minutes left, so I don't know if we will have time to finish this. Perhaps we leave it for everybody. Mm-hmm. Assuming these two curves from Ukraine, then how would you do sketch this? Obviously, it's dependent, because we see a very strong increase of personal information on the net. We have seen a late increase in awareness to high, which doesn't mean extremely high, but quite high. So what would happen here to the security incidents given these situations? And you have to consider both the amount of information that is on the net, which make it attractive for people to hack, and maybe you are getting more and more hackers. So even if it was little personal info on the net, maybe originally the few hackers that were with the low awareness caused many security incidents relatively, and then at some time you get an enormous attraction of hackers who want to utilize that still the awareness is low, so maybe the incidents increase. And then as you are getting more and more awareness, even if you are getting more personal information on that, maybe the increase is low and so on. Mm-hmm. So you will. This is going to be a bit more complicated to argue, but I think you should do that. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, and thanks everybody for this.